Welcome to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy. This is a program where we bring up the conversation. Your hosts, Deborah Flora, speaker, writer, and movie producer, and Cindy Fay, author, Bible teacher, and international correspondent. And now, it's time to elevate the dialogue and bring it up.
Welcome to Bring It Up Today. I'm Cindy Fay.
And I'm Deborah Flora.
Well, Deb, it's with a great deal of concern, honestly, as a wife and a mom of sons and the Mimi of two grandsons, that I have been reading a host of articles recently about the new, quote, guidelines published by the American Psychological Association that basically attack traditional masculinity and seek to lump it in with all kinds of extreme behavior.
Oh, it's just the next step in this cultural attack on masculinity, really. I mean, you know, Cindy, you know, when I was acting, I always knew that I would be cast as the hero wife and the husband would be portrayed as the clumsy buffoon.
Of course.
But that stage of the constant mocking of masculinity has now turned into a full-on condemnation of anything inherently male as either bad, wrong, and now dubbed toxic masculinity.
Yes.
Really, I think it's another fallout of the Me Too movement gone a bit too far, compounded with the whole girls rule, quote unquote, mantra from the Women's March. We've just gone over the edge, basically. And in this latest cultural barrage, it can be hard to sift through all of this, through what is true, what is healthy, what is right, and what can we do about it. That's why we are so happy to have Dr. Mark Baker with us today. Dr. Mark is a licensed psychologist, a marriage and family therapist, and the executive director of the LaVie Counseling Centers. Dr. Mark, we are so glad you're with us. And in the spirit of actually liking men, we welcome you wholeheartedly.
Thank you.
It's
comforting to know there still are some places where we'll
absolutely. Absolutely. And this is one. We would love to bring it up with you today. So let's just jump right in, Mark. This past month, as I mentioned earlier, the American Psychological Association delivered some sad news for fans of traditional masculinity, which, by the way, Deb and I are fans of traditional masculinity, when they published their first ever guidelines for psychological practice with boys and men. The language of these guidelines states that the, quote, harmful ideology of masculinity, stoicism, competitiveness, achievement, dominance, and aggression, together with anti-femininity, adventure, risk, violence, and the eschewal of the appearance of weakness, all that is in quotes, has got to go. All of these attributes have got to go, according to this, to the guidelines. Their website states, quote, traditional masculinity is on the whole harmful, unquote. This sounds, Mark, like an all-out attack on manhood and masculinity, even in its finest form. So can you unpack this for us as well as the public outcry that followed it?
Right. Right. There's been a huge backlash, which has been very unfortunate. I think the APA have given themselves a black eye by making these kinds of statements that are so biased and slanted. And you're right. They've lumped in characteristics of masculinity like achievement, adventure, risk, that they're calling it all harmful. And it's based on the research of a few researchers. And if you read the document, which I have, it's 40 pages long. It's clearly they're making a political statement, and it's unfortunate. They feel they need to be the advocates for people who have felt disenfranchised sexually, and specifically, I think they're trying to deal with the transgendered population and be an advocate for them.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, they have unnecessarily felt like they've got to attack traditional masculinity in order to, you know, protect who they feel to be people who are disenfranchised in our society. And so if you really look up the bios of the researchers, if you take the time to do it, the people that are claiming that traditional masculinity is toxic all have a political bias. They have an agenda. They view themselves as social justice warriors. And so they're really trying to make a statement that's a political statement, not so much a scientific statement. And that's very unfortunate, because then a lot of people are looking at the APA and say, well, I can't trust you.
Yes.
You know, you're making statements that are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to tell me that the masculine drive for achievement and adventure and risk is negative and harmful?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. And we have lots of research to suggest to the contrary, but they're not quoting that research.
Right. Hey,
and they even had to walk back their statement, too.
Yes, they did. Well, here's a sentence that actually exists on the APA website. It's paired with a summary of the new guidelines, and here's the statement, quote, "Indeed, when researchers strip away stereotypes and expectation, there isn't much difference in the basic behaviors of men and women," unquote. So I want to go to let's go to our maker. What is healthy masculinity then as God defines it, and how is our culture tearing it to shreds? I mean, it's tearing it to shreds, in my opinion, when they say there isn't any difference between men and women.
Well, that's what they want you to believe, and that's a political statement. Certainly, it's not a biological statement. Medical science would say that's ridiculous. There are some biological differences that you cannot wish away, and there's tons of psychological research that suggests there's a difference, and of course, we know the Bible says there's a difference. Men are told to love your wife as life as Christ loved the church. I mean, that's quite clear for us. That's our number one commandment, that a strong man is a loving man. A strong man views leadership as service. You know, we're told that, not dominance. If you want to call Christian masculinity the most traditional masculinity of our culture today, it goes back to those principles.
Yes.
We've never believed in dominance as power. We've always believed in service as power. Now, I have to tell you that men need to be disciplined. Your testosterone can run amok, and we know that. Most violent crimes are by men because their testosterone has not been disciplined. But there's a difference between disciplining men and shaming them.
Yes.
And I think a core reason that men become violent is because they've been shamed, and some of them shamed for being men. And sadly, this is exactly what APA is doing. They're shaming men for being men. That's going to lead to more violence. We know that in those communities where there are traditional men in the home and in the community, there's less violence from men.
Mm-hmm.
Young boys who grow up with traditional male figures to look up to are less violent. So what they're saying, sadly, what APA is saying is just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That we need godly, traditionally oriented, masculine men in our communities to bring violence down,
yes.
Not try to make men be more like women.
Yes.
That never works.
Exactly. Well, Mark, what aspects of manhood, quote unquote, are God-breathed? You kind of alluded to that already.
Yep.
And which are sin, you know, manhood gone awry?
Well, I think we are to be leaders. We are to be strong and stand our ground. We are to be assertive but not aggressive. Those are God-breathed characteristics of masculinity. And Jesus tells us that. Jesus himself was a carpenter, which basically in those days meant a stonemason.
Mm-hmm.
He was a strong man who stood up for what he believed, and he didn't back down on his principles. Those are characteristics of manhood that are correct. When it goes awry or sinful is when we use aggression for violence. When Jesus said, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, you turn to him left, the other as well, he was making a statement that in those days you couldn't use your left hand, so to strike someone on the right cheek was a backhanded slap of humiliation.
Mm.
He said, don't let anyone humiliate you. You stand there and stand up for your values. You turn your cheek so the next punch has to be a full frontal attack on your face. You do not back down.
Mm-hmm.
That's manhood.
Mm-hmm.
We stand up for what we believe. We're not violent, meaning we don't take that force and violate other people's boundaries, but it is our job, just like his in the temple, to push people back to the boundaries where they belong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's masculinity, aggression that protects boundaries. When it goes awry is when we use aggression to violate boundaries and we violate other people. Then it's sinful.
Mm-hmm.
That same powerful force of masculine aggression can go awry if it's not disciplined.
Yes, exactly. Well, you're listening to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy, and we are interviewing Dr. Mark Baker on the whole new guidelines from the American Psychological Association about, quote, toxic masculinity. We're going straight to the Creator to find out what is good, true, and right about masculinity, and where has in our culture perhaps it's gone awry, and how are those definitions being twisted in some ways. Mark, certainly the proliferation of negative behaviors, I think of people like Harvey Weinstein, certainly reprehensible, but they account for a very small minority of men. So here's my question. Why are all men being made to pay for this bad behavior of a few? That's kind of what I see happening here.
Well, the sad truth is that most people in our society do not do that. It's just the vocal minority that have a very liberal platform to do that. They're lumping all men together. APA is trying to lump all men together as toxic. But most people in America don't believe that. I speak to men's groups all the time, and in every men's group I've been to, not a single man has said, Harvey Weinstein represents me.
Mm-hmm.
Not one.
Mm-hmm.
They all feel that's abhorrent. this is a man who's not had masculinity gone awry. Here's a man who's abusing power. That really, for men to violate women like that, they're not acting like men. They're acting like people who are in positions of power, and they're dominating other people in a way that's ungodly.
Mm-hmm.
And true men, men who understand who they are as men, do not violate and dominate women. They feel that within their own soul, that this is not how I am to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it's gone awry, especially power. We now know that people in positions of power are the ones that are abusive. It's not masculinity that's a problem.
Right.
And the real root of the problem, I'll tell you, is this. It's not toxic masculinity, but it's toxic shame.
Mm-hmm.
That men have been shamed, that shame has not been dealt with, and those men hurt not only other women but other men because they're not dealing with their shame.
Mm.
People like Harvey Weinstein have unresolved issues with shame that he's not addressed, and that leads him to be the abusive person that he is.
Mm-hmm.
His masculinity has gone awry because of his unaddressed shame.
Yes. Well, what are the repercussions in our society as we see the demasculinization of men through things like what's been going on with these new, quote, guidelines? What are you seeing in men?
Well,
what are the repercussions?
I think if you're going to demasculate or shame men for being men, you're going to make them more violent. That's exactly what we see.
Mm.
If you look at the school shootings, for instance, there are white kids or white men who have been shamed, abused, belittled, made fun of, and that's never been addressed, and so then you see violence as a result of that. I've been to the largest maximum security prison in America and talk to the men who were the most violent men in our culture. And they've all been humiliated and shamed as men and boys growing up, and they've not had fathers affirming their masculinity. So you see what the core issue is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that masculinity is toxic. It's that when we have broken hearts, they're not healed.
Yes.
And we can't bring those wounds out into the open and have God and the community of others heal those things.
Mm-hmm.
That's when men go awry. And we're going to see greater violence if we continue to shame men for being men and try to emasculate them. We've tried this before in generations past. Warren Farrell famously wrote the book Liberated Man in the 70s. He spent 10 years going around the country telling men to be more like women.
Mm.
He saw it didn't work. He repented and he changed. And he's not a Christian. He just woke up and said, women don't want men to be more like women. It's wrongheaded. It doesn't work.
And society doesn't need men to be more like women.
No,
you know,
well, it doesn't work.
As we, you know, we're wives, a lot of us listening. How do we encourage our men then to flourish in their masculinity? How do we stop shaming and begin uplifting?
You need to catch men doing it right. Sadly, men tend to withdraw more than women, and women tend to start conversations more harshly than men.
Mm.
So you just need to be aware of that. Women are more in touch with their emotions, so they tend to start off a conversation more critically.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that the main thing you could do is realize men don't need your criticism. Now, they need conversation, and you need to bring up things that you're upset about, but what you need to do is catch them being good examples of men.
Mm.
Instead of trying to catch them being bad examples.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say start your conversations softer. Don't start it with, we need to talk, you know, in a harsh tone.
That never means anything good.
It never means anything good. And when you say that, what you're going to get from a man is he's not going to want to talk because he knows what's coming next.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say start it off softer. Realize the differences between men and women are God-ordained and they are good. And you can affirm him. And when you see strong acts of other men that you think are godly, point those out, affirm those things, so that he'll know you don't hate men for being men.
Mm.
You see the differences, but you don't view it as a negative thing.
Excellent.
That's great. Yeah,
right.
That's great. Well, thanks, Dr. Mark. As we continue, as a mom of a teenage son, I'm growing increasingly concerned about how to effectively parent him to become a strong adult male. Well, just ahead, Dr. Mark Baker answers our pressing questions on parenting children in a quote-unquote toxic masculinity culture. Don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Bring It Up. I'm Deborah Flora.
And I'm Cindy Fay.
Well, last segment, we had a great conversation with Dr. Mark Baker about this latest attack on men as the American Psychological Association published a report labeling most traditional male characteristics as quote-unquote toxic masculinity. I mean, it literally hits home for me because my husband and I are raising our son to be courageous, protective, assertive, and to be able to stand for his convictions. I mean, that's a tough order in a culture that is trying to condemn all of these noble male qualities.
Yes, it is, Deb. Well, you know, my sons are grown, but now, we only do males in our family. So I have now two beautiful twin grandsons, and I'm super concerned about how this is going to affect them. I know it's now an even tougher task for my son to raise his sons and my daughter-in-law to raise her boys with the resilient qualities that we instilled in our kids. This really begs the question, how do we raise our boys to become the men that God has created them to be? And what can we do as parents? What is our role as moms, as grandparents? How do we help them navigate these cultural attacks on their very identity and sexuality? That is why we are so glad that Dr. Mark Baker is with us for another segment to help us answer these questions. Dr. Mark is an author, a licensed psychologist, marriage and family therapist, and the executive director of the LaVie Counseling Centers. Dr. Mark, thank you so much for being with us for yet another segment. It's just riveting.
Well, thank you for having me. This is really important. I'm so proud of you for doing this show because it really needs to be said.
Thank you.
This conversation needs to be had.
Yeah,
it does. It does. And by the way, it takes a real man to enter the den of estrogen. So you are a real man, Dr. Mark. Thank you.
I am feeling a little intimidated.
No, we affirm that you are strong and courageous. So, you know, well, here's the thing. For many years, we've witnessed the media and the entertainment culture portraying men as buffoons. That was like a mocking of men. That's kind of the first stage. It's now turned to a condemnation of masculinity with the APA coming out with that study declaring traditional masculinity to be toxic. So before we can talk about how we can help our children navigate this new cultural assault on their identities, give us a quick overview. What do we need to know about this study? What was the purpose behind it?
I really think the purpose of the study was political. We know that less than 9% of all psychologists are conservative, which means over 90% consider themselves liberal or progressive. And so they feel an obligation to really make political statements with their science. And so they have what they call advocacy research. What that means is they're advocates for a particular outcome, and they're going to do research that supports their outcome. Now, I don't really call that research myself. I know what conclusion I want to come to. Now I'm going to go look for data to support my conclusion. And so these guidelines that they published for the treatment of men and boys is actually a political statement more than research. They're collecting the research that supports their political ideology. And they feel the need to stand up for the disenfranchised sexually in our community, which really includes sort of the transgender population. And so they're making a statement to try to support them by attacking traditional masculinity. So just keep that in mind when you read these kinds of documents, that a lot of what happens in psychology is good research where people are trying to produce good outcomes. Like, there are lots of books on how to be a good father or how to heal your relationship with your father as a son. There's lots of good stuff out there. But there's also things like this statement that are really more political statements than they are research that's trying to objectively help men. They say they are, but if you read the document, which I have, they're clearly making a political statement.
That's such a great point, because that's actually the opposite of science. You know, science, you look at the data and come to a conclusion, and it is important for us to know that, so we don't just go with whatever wind is blowing at any time. And in the face of this political agenda, which it really is, and it's pervading our schools, it's even in the form of trying to deny a difference between the genders. In the face of this, what is the truth that we can share with our children, both from science and from scripture, about their identity as men? What can we share with them that is factual and scripturally based?
There are differences between men and women. We have lots of psychological and, of course, medical research that establishes that there are real differences. Testosterone is more prevalent in men, and it creates more physical energy. If you've raised boys, I've raised boys, and I also have a girl. Actually, I have a twin, twins, or one boy and one girl. So I have observed the real-time differences between the two. The same household, they were raised in the same room for the first few years of their life, and yet they're very, very different. It's based on biological differences that are built in. And to deny that is only going to lead to problems. Mm-hmm. I think it is important to affirm the sexuality of your children. And sex, let's be clear, sex is binary in the human species, except for extremely rare anomalies. You're either male or female as a sex. What society, and sadly the American Psychological Association, are arguing is that gender is a choice. It's cultural and a choice. Gender is, you know, your behavior, your characteristics, the clothes you wear, the length of your hair. Those are all choices that we all make, and that, they're saying, is culturally determined, and we all get to choose what gender we want. You cannot choose your sex. That is a biological given. Mm-hmm. And for all of history until now, people's gender matched up with their sex, and that was considered to be healthy. It's just that our society now is questioning that. I think that's going to lead to a lot of confusion and problems. Because it is still the case today that gender confusion is a problem.
Yes.
It's not health. It's a problem that we need to help people with if you're confused about your gender. But the push in our society today is not to recognize that.
And I love it. It's the very beginning of Scripture that God made them male and female, man and woman. We know that, and it's always reinforced by science. Science always backs up the Bible when we look at it clearly. So practically, as you said, we both are raising 13-year-old boys, and we've got listeners who are. How do we then, in practice, reinforce what we know to be true scientifically, scripturally, and health-wise? How do we reinforce that in our home? What kind of conversations do we have with our kids?
Well, let me speak to moms first, because I know you have a lot of moms that mm-hmm. listen. I would say that what you need to do is accept that your little boy always feels different than you. Now, I know you love your son. I love my son and my daughter the same. But for moms, realize he's going to grow up, and he knows he's got to grow up and love you, but be different from you.
Right.
And your daughter's going to grow up and love you and be like you in some very, very profound ways. So there's a way in which your boy needs to differentiate from you that's different than your daughter. Now, daughters also need to argue with their moms, but that's because you are so close, and they know they need to become like you and yet have their own identity. For men, in a very profound way, they know they need to grow up and be very different from you. So men tend to push back. They grow up, and then when they're getting ready to get married, women think, oh, this guy's commitment phobic. No, men are not. It's just that they need to have a little pushback away from the women in their lives because they grew up to need to separate in a way that little girls don't. So don't be angry at your son when he needs to be different from you in a gender or sexual way.
Mm.
I would say, let me say this to single moms who are trying to do a good job raising their sons, you also don't want to turn to him as a surrogate spouse. You don't want to place on him the role of an absent father or someone who's not there for you. Yes, you recognize his masculinity. That's good. But you need to be age appropriate with what you need from him. And I think that you need to recognize that boys need to be with other boys. We affirm that community that's needed. Men need other men. They need mentors. Boys need other mentors in addition to their relationship with their father. And we can affirm that boys getting together with other boys is a good thing. And it's different than when they get together with mixed groups of boys and girls. And we want to affirm, of course, both. We want them to socialize with both, but they have a need to be with other boys too.
That's great.
I would say it's important for us to do is to recognize the good qualities of men when you see them as a mom. Your boy growing up needs to hear you say things like, wasn't that man kind? I like the way that he did that. Wasn't that good how that man handled that situation? So that your boy grows up realizing that his mom affirms masculinity. He needs to know that who I am fundamentally in my being is something that my mom respects, and she likes that when she sees that in other men.
That's great.
these are all things that we need to be aware of as parents in raising boys who grow up to feel good about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to Bring It Up, Deb and Cindy. We're having a conversation with Dr. Mark Baker about this cultural push to condemn male characteristics, good ones, as somehow toxic masculinity. And we're really digging down into what do we do about this now as parents, as moms? How do we help our sons become the men that God created them to be? And I like, Dr. Mark, that you were talking about how, you know, for a single mom, we talk about this a lot, she can find another another man to be a role model in her son's life. We don't always have to have that man right there, but we could find someone else. And here's a question. You brought this up, and I think it's really important, because as women, acknowledging our sons are different, we can subconsciously continue this shaming without knowing it. Can you talk a moment about shame, what we can do to make sure we don't do it, and if we feel that we have, what do we do to make it right?
I really think that the problem we see with men going awry, the Harvey Weinsteins in our society, our prisons are full of men who've done violent, violent things to other people. The core of that issue is unacknowledged shame. They've been shamed for being men. I bet if we looked at Harvey Weinstein's childhood, you'd see there was a pudgy, not very attractive kid who was shamed and rejected by other women. So he grew up, and when he had power, he used that power to sexually violate and be violent towards them. So what we don't want to do as parents is to shame our boys for being boys. That if they need to get the wiggles out, you don't see that as a bad thing. You don't label them as a bad kid. You send them outside to get the wiggles out. Shame is different than guilt. Guilt is the bad feeling we have for having done something bad. Shame is the bad feeling we have for being something bad. So shame is about being defective and not worthy of love. The Bible tells us you are fearfully and wonderfully made. So at your core, you bear the image of God in there. That makes you worthy of love. Now, you don't deserve it because you can't earn love, but you're worthy of it because you're an image bearer of God himself on the planet. And that sense of worthiness it gets contradicted by the feeling of shame. If the shame is the lie, you're not worthy of love.
That
causes us to hide and act out and do very destructive things.
That's a really important thing, and I love the fact that we can turn that around if we've ever made our son feel bad for being a boy. As we conclude here, you know, my heart really goes out to these boys, even if we build them up in the home, and as you said, we say, this is what we do in our house, here's how we see men, here's how I honor your father, how we teach our daughter to honor fathers, but then we have to send them out into the world, and there's this story of these boys who showed up at a school with t-shirts that just said, boys are good. I mean, what a tepid statement, but they were trying to look for any self-esteem, and the school told them to take it off. What do we do to equip them to face that, and when do we step in?
I think it's important to give them a realistic picture of what's going on in the world today. I think they should know a little bit about what's going on in the news. I think the example of the Catholic boys at the Lincoln Memorial, you know, from Covington Catholic School, is a good one to talk about with your kids. Those boys were doing the right thing. They were being aggressed upon. They were being confronted by social advocates who had, a cause to make him do what he was doing. They stood their ground and acted appropriately, and we need to let our boys know you're going to be attacked for being a Christian and for being a boy in society. A lot of this attack upon traditional masculinity is really attack on Christian views of masculinity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we need to let them know that. Then yet what we believe in our household is that it is a good thing for you to be who you are. And there's no shame in you being a boy. And if you being what your society is going to call cisgendered, we call a boy. And it's okay. And so we validate that and yet prepare them for the challenges that are going to be coming. We don't want our kids to grow up in a bubble. So when they do get out of Christian school and go into the world, they're not equipped to be able to stand their ground and make a statement back. So I would say we need to prepare them. And I'd say for us as parents, you need to do some reading. I would say for all parents who are sending their kids to college, you need to read Jonathan Haidt's The Coddling of the American Mind, because our academic institutions are attacking the belief systems of the children that we're sending there. Mm-hmm. So we need to be prepared and aware of what the attacks are on our masculinity, attacks on our Christian values, and be prepared to stand our ground that what we believe we're confident in that. And it's good enough and right for us to hold those beliefs.
Amen. Dr. Mark, thank you so much. You know, the Bible tells us that we are to gain wisdom, and today you've given us that gift. Well, as we continue today, these two words can make a chill run down the spines of many of us. Valentine's Day. If we're single or relationship challenged, this can be one of the toughest times of the year. So up next, how to both give and receive love that does not depend on fairy tale love. Up next. This is Cindy with an invitation for you to join us as a partner in the Bring It Up radio show. We're a nonprofit, so your donation is tax deductible. Now, this is the program where we're not afraid to bring up the hot topics of the day. Whatever the issue, we're ready to take it on from a biblical perspective to help you think and act biblically as a champion for your family, your community, your country, and the world. And you make it all possible with your prayer and financial support. You can donate by logging on to our website, bringitupmedia.com, and clicking the donate button. Give any amount, put it on your credit card, and maybe make it a monthly support. And again, because we're nonprofit, your gift is tax deductible. So come join us in strengthening biblical values in our homes and in our crazy culture by partnering with us. Just log on to bringitupmedia.com and click on the donate button. And thanks. We're in this together. Again, that's bringitupmedia.com.
Welcome back to Bring It Up. I'm Deborah Flora.
And I'm Cindy Fay.
Well, Cindy, I, like many people, was in the store the other day looking for the perfect Valentine's Day card, which doesn't always exist.
Boy, you are jumping on it, Deb.
You know what? I was trying, thinking ahead. It's coming up this week.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And I was in the for husbands section of the area of the red and pink cards when a woman passed by. And, you know, my heart really went out because as she walked by, she mumbled to herself, "Guess I won't be getting one of those this year."
Oh, how sad.
And before I could respond, she turned and walked away. However, comment, it just really lingered with me. And I was reminded that this time of the year is often really challenging for a vast number of women who are either single or maybe they're in a relationship, but it's not exactly the Hallmark material that we're seeing in that card aisle.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Deb, I remember when we had Lisa Anderson on our show. She leads the Boundless Singles Ministry, of course, for Focus on the Family. We love having her. And she said there is this, you know, trifecta of challenging holidays for singles that starts with Thanksgiving and then barrels right along into Christmas and then culminates in the dreaded Valentine's Day. So, yeah, it's a tough time for a lot of people.
Yes, it can be. You know, and while many, you know, people talk about the January doldrums, one of the leading national suicide prevention organizations recently said that they received the most call, get this, on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, honestly.
No. You know, and Cindy, I can relate to this. For most of my young adult life, I was single well into my 30s, you know, so I can relate. I remember too many Februaries filled with heartache and longing and sadness and big old question marks. Had I missed something? Finally, one year, I had enough of feeling like a part of the Lonely Hearts Club, and I decided that instead I would use it as motivation and an opportunity for heart healing, because really, it just made me realize how much I had going on, that how much sadness I need to have healed. And that's why I found a CBN article titled Valentine's Day Survival Guide. It just was so meaningful because it's looking at this as an opportunity to heal as that comes up, those sadness and that heartache. So why don't we go through some of those steps?
Yeah, some of the steps to kind of put a different lens on Valentine's Day, right?
Yes.
The first thing we can do is heart healing really begins when we get real and get honest with ourselves. Edna Lee is a licensed therapist, and she said this, I quote, "I encourage a woman to be real about loss and to admit, you know, I'm not going to celebrate the day as it's meant to be, and that really is not so great." So just be honest with yourself. Then let go of having to celebrate romantically And here's the kicker, be open to new ways. And so that's what she said. The initial step really is to grieve the reality that the day is not going to look the same as it does for other people. Okay, that's okay. We're not cookie cutters. And when we get real about our heartache, then we can start to ask God to heal that hurt and to begin to open us up to new avenues.
Oh, that's great. So the beginning step for heart healing is get real.
Yeah.
Let's get real, and we can with one another. And then the next thing is get perspective. I mean, so often we can think that a relationship will solve pretty much all of our life problems and bring true happiness. We're bombarded by this in the culture. You know, it's that you complete me theme that we see in movies, books, songs.
No codependency there, Deb.
Yes. I am a walking vacuum and I need you to complete me. You know, it's true that as a single woman, I was there. We may miss out on an experience when we are in that situation. But the next step after getting real is to recognize the false assumptions that a relationship would consistently be life-giving and romantic. Mm. I mean, the reality is that while romantic relationships can be truly wonderful, they also bring challenges of their own, especially if they're not the right one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, too often we just jump into a relationship thinking that any relationship is better than none, especially this time of year.
Yeah, and you know, Deb, the thing is, I've so often said to single women, listen, being a little lonely is a whole lot better than being in the wrong relationship, right?
Oh, man, that is so true.
I would choose a little bit of, loneliness on Valentine's Day rather than a 365 days in the wrong marriage.
Oh, absolutely. And, man, in my, adult life, I've been alone. I've been in the wrong relationship, and I've finally been in the right relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right relationship is great. Second to that is having that time to yourself and not getting stuck with the wrong person.
Yep.
You know, and we often jump into that relationship because we're looking for that other to fill all the deficits in our lives. Here's the good news. Any hole we feel in our heart is actually what Pascal called a God-shaped vacuum.
Mm.
That's really what we're trying to fill. And it's made for him to fill, not another person. So if we find ourselves alone on Valentine's Day, we can fill up with him. The other person is not necessarily the answer.
Well, and you know, what one person can fill us up completely? That is a Herculean task that no man is up to. Let's just be honest.
Setting him up for failure is what that would be doing.
Exactly.
Yes.
So get some perspective. The third thing we can do is to get our love tank filled. Now, Valentine's Day provides an opportunity to really start to reflect on the source. What is true love and where does it come from? 1 John 4:7-10, we always can go to scripture, tells us that God is the author of love. So let's remember who the source is. As women, our experience of love and our relationships, you know, it's not limited to the presence or absence of a human relationship, no matter how much the media or our culture tells us it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We are not worth more because we have a man by our side. Let's just underscore that. God is our creator, defines us as his beloved daughter. He said this, "This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us first and sent his son as a sacrifice for us." God romances a woman by pursuing her heart. He romances us by loving us first. We can ask him to make Valentine's Day meaningful for us as his beloved bride. And we can take this opportunity at the same time to talk to him, just go to our Father about our desires, which honestly may or may not include romance from a man. Our desires could be for great service, for great passion and purpose that doesn't include being connected in a marriage relationship. You know, that's not the be all and end all.
Exactly. Well, you're listening to Bring It Up with Deb and Cindy, and we're talking about facing Valentine's Day if we are single or maybe if we are not in a relationship that really, you know, reflects the Hallmark perfect cards. And none of them do, by the way.
Which of us has that?
Yeah. So it's really an opportunity for feeling sad to get our heart healed. And the steps are get real, get perspective, get your love tank filled. And the last one is get creative. Given the fact that Valentine's Day is not going to get erased from the calendar anytime soon, single women can allow allow themselves to look toward Valentine's Day with anticipation. Believe it or not, turning the day into a celebration can mean looking at all of the different kinds of love we do have in our lives and celebrating that. It may be as simple as initiating with one or two for a chick flick, that kind of Galentine's Day effect, or the creativity could extend to groups. So we wanted to share a couple of ideas. Like we said, you know, pampering night for the ladies, pedicures, facials, and fun. You know, that can be a great way to actually celebrate the girl, you know, the girlfriends and the friendships, that kind of love that we have in our lives.
Yep. And as you said, Deb, a chick flick is always good. We could, you know, end the evening by praying together. We can throw a potluck dinner for friends, neighbors, other singles, make it a game night. That is a blast. You can send cards and gifts to friends and family. How about to someone who's maybe recently widowed, an elderly person? You can make an enormous impact in the simplest way. That's just the truth.
Absolutely. And here's another one, by the way. You can sow into what you dream for your own life if that's what God's called you to. One of the ways to do it is to volunteer to babysit for a married couple while they enjoy a romantic evening out. Believe it or not, while it may remind you of what you're longing for, you can get fulfilled knowing that you are serving someone else. Mm-hmm. Really, that principle of sowing and reaping. Sow into that dream if you want to be married one day. You know, Cindy, when I thought about the single woman in the card aisle who bemoaned not receiving a Valentine this year, I was so reminded that we all have a love letter, an even better card just sitting and waiting to be read anytime we want, not just once a year. God has given it to us in His scripture.
Yes.
And now God, by the way, could easily send me something like the funny cards we see in the aisle that says something like, well, in spite of the mess you've been most of your life, I still love you. I mean, He could send me that one. But instead, He lavishes us with His promises that, quote, I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with loving kindness from Jeremiah 31:3. He professes His unwavering devotion, promising, quote, He will never leave us nor forsake us. Hebrews 13:5. Man, that's better than any romantic movie or letter or note. That is a Valentine's Day to celebrate.
It sure is. Well, on our website at bringitupmedia.com, we will have a link to a great article from Crosswalk entitled, When You're Not Looking Forward to Valentine's Day. And that'll turn around after you read that article, I promise. Mm-hmm. So that will be at bringitupmedia.com.
And by the way, that'll also be on our Facebook page, Bring It Up Media. And we want to hear from you. What's your creative idea for Valentine's Day? Let us know on our Facebook page, Bring It Up Media. Well, as we continue, Valentine's Day is coming. What if we're married and we want to put some fresh, fun conversation into our celebration? Well, up next, we found some great conversation starters designed to help us dream together, plan together, play together, and stay strong together for a lifetime.
And now, a Catch the Vision moment with Bill and Kathleen from American Vision Windows.
At American Vision Windows, it's not just business. It really is about our customers and our employees and their lives, because their lives matter.
At American Vision Windows, we empower our teams to do more, to go further, and to add humanity to the bottom line.
Our San Diego general manager, Alex, had this to say.
I really love working for American Vision Windows and working as a team and as a family. You feel happy to come to work every day.
Revolutionizing the home improvement industry, one customer at a time, while changing the lives of our employees for the better.
This month, American Vision Windows is offering a free upgrade to the beautiful Delmar Series window with sound suppression technology, plus free expert installation. Call 888-228-0722, 888-228-0722, or AmericanVisionWindows.com. CSMB number 778-326 cannot be combined with any other offer. Some restrictions apply. Offer expires
2/28/1922. Catch the vision, American Vision Windows.
Welcome back to Bring It Up. I'm Cindy Fay.
And I'm Deborah Flora.
Well, okay, so it's Valentine's Day week, Deb, and my husband and I, we've been married 38 years now. And honestly, I want to do something fun and fresh, so I am racking my brain. How about you?
I'm sorry. I'm just still stopping on the 38 years. That's phenomenal. Phenomenal. We're going on 19, like half your years.
Yeah.
So if you're racking your brain, I'm racking my brain even more.
All right.
So there we go.
Well, good. We're good company together. So that's why I loved coming across a great article in Crosswalk by Arlene Pelican about the kind of conversations that we can have with our spouse that are fresh, fun, romantic, conversations that are going to reveal our hearts, our dreams, and conversations that have, wait for it, nothing to do with our kids or grandkids.
Wow.
Isn't that rare? Because almost every conversation we have as a couple is centered on our family instead of us.
Okay, so this segment is for me, because when you said not talking about the kids, my mind just went blank. So let's jump into it.
Well, exactly. So here are a few. We're going to throw them out. Fresh and fun ways to begin that kind of Valentine's Day conversation with your honey this week. The best thing is that these don't cost any money. They can be done anywhere, anytime. They don't require a fancy dress, a pricey meal. And you don't even have to get dressed up to have this conversation. Just pick a spot where you're not going to be distracted, where you can dream a little, where you can be vulnerable and transparent, where you can really hear each other's hearts. And so here are a few ways to just get that conversation going. The first thing you can do is, why not start dreaming and planning a big trip away from the kids, like
Wahoo.
A second honeymoon. Woohoo! I'm talking your language. Now, if that's not in the cards right now, how about a mini vacay, even a staycation? One night at a local hotel, get away from your responsibilities and the kids. I tell you, it's going to work a miracle in your marriage and in your sanity. So start talking about where you'll go, where you'll stay, what restaurant you'd like to try. Maybe there's a museum or a play you've been wanting to catch. Who might babysit? Just start brainstorming. And then that night when you're having that conversation, put the date on the calendar. My hubby and I have found that the anticipation is almost as fun as the actual event.
Oh, my goodness. My anticipation's going. I want to have that conversation.
Yes, do it.
Here's another great conversation starter. You can ask your spouse, if you had an extra hour every day, what would you do with it?
Mm.
You know, we can often use the excuse that I just don't have enough time. We know we ought to exercise, but we don't have enough time. We'd love to learn to cook Italian, but we don't have enough time. Well, what if we magically gained an hour every day? How would we use it? I mean, aren't you curious to know what your spouse would say? I am. Other than sleeping, I want to know beyond that, you know? And the best part, when we share what we would do with that hour, maybe the next thing we do together is strategize how to make that hour happen for each other.
Mm.
I mean, what could be more loving than that? That's a great conversation starter.
The other question we can ask each other is, are we physically fit for our age? One of the most loving things we can do together is non-judgmentally consider that question, our eating habits, our fitness, because you know what? We want to be there for each other as long as possible, and physical health is going to play a big part of that. So let's start by asking each other, what's one thing we can do together to get healthier?
Great. That's great. Here's another question. What is something specific I can do to make you feel more respected and loved?
Mm.
I mean, it's easier to answer this question than it is to ask it. But the heart of this question is focused on how we can serve our mate instead of how we can be served. Philippians 2:5-7 says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. He made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. Well, let's have that, you know, that conversation before there's a crisis. What a great way to start that conversation.
Yep. Well, another question we can ask is, what's your biggest work challenge? You know, we want to come alongside each other, pray for each other. Just ask that simple question. How can I be praying for you about with your job?
And one other thing that you can do just to brainstorm, ask a question, when we retire, where would we like to live? I mean, it's healthy to look forward, to plan, to dream, to hear your husband's hearts. It's such a great opportunity to start that conversation.
Well, wherever you go this week and however you choose to celebrate and honor the ones you love, we pray you know that you are perfectly and completely loved by God, that he calls you his masterpiece, that he never gives up his pursuit of you, and that he is faithful to every promise he's ever made to you, and he loves you exactly where you are. Our wish, happy Valentine's Day to you and those you love.
Yes, and thank you so much for listening.